Blog Talk Radio.
We never spend time talking to you, so we figured we'd lay it on you, let you know how we feel about love.
Paint a pretty smile each day. Loving is a blessing, yeah. Never let it fade away. It's all about love, yeah. Build yourself a true romance. Beauty that's around you, yeah. You deserve just one more chance, my dear, my dear. Let the light shine all through your life. Feel your little heart aglow. Take the time, make up your mind. It's all about love, yeah. Talking to yourself is fine. Makes you feel much better. Know just where to draw the line. Girl, my dear, girl, my dear heart, yeah.
that cool or what? Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly.
And happy Black History Month and happy Valentine's Day to all. Thank you for taking the time out to tune in to another edition of Progressive News Weekly, where we bring you news and information that's, well, current and called from around the world. It's news that's relevant. It's news that you can use. It's news that you won't hear on mainstream media typically. By that I mean there's no political or business influence on anything you'll hear from Progressive News Weekly. We don't do politics, simply stated, as I like to say from time to time, in terms of politics, left wing, right wing, same bird. And so I don't lean into that. I'm an independent thinker, and we at Progressive News Weekly encourage everyone to be independent thinker, irrespective of labels and titles. Be who you are, and you'll make the world a better place. So, with that said, this evening we have a program that's intended to encourage you, to inspire you, enlighten you, empower you, and hopefully, well, instill you to get involved, not sit on the side, but to get involved with some action and make a difference for you, your loved ones, all those around you, your community, your state, the government, and the world. You are a special energy with a special purpose, and if it weren't so, you would not be listening at this time, at this moment. And I'm just honored and, well, blessed to even be a part of it and to have that awareness. So this evening, well, this evening, we have a program that is of programs, and it's programs like these that truly keep me motivated to do what I do, to just try to make a difference. When I have guests such as I have this evening that are able to join me, it's not just a matter of enlightenment. It's truly fun. So when you can get something accomplished and have fun at it, all the better. I want to encourage everyone to step back and understand that one of your divine purposes is to be happy. Now, it may not always feel or look that way, but in the broad, grand scheme of things, there is some happiness to be had, and I'm not speaking from an outside view. I'm speaking from experience, as I've certainly had many ups and downs and around and arounds and through the merry-go-rounds and all the other antidotes, if you will. And yet, if I look back, I can say there was something to be happy about, although in the moment, I didn't always see it. So I'm a work in progress myself. Believe me, I don't sit here and point fingers and give these antidotes and suggestions without practicing it myself. And it's not easy in the society we live in when you can turn on that boob tube, and it's never been more correctly labeled than now, boob tube, because we're you and I, who partake of that vehicle. We are boobed. And I say we, as I said, I'm not pointing fingers without looking back at that thumb squarely coming back between my eyes, because I get caught up in it myself. But it's a work in progress. Key word being progress. And secondary word being work. Because it is work to try to maneuver through the minutiae. So I try to limit my exposure to that to that boob tube, where from my most recent statistic, well over 50% is propaganda that is designed not to empower and enlighten, but to suppress and regress. So it's a program such as what I am attempting to bring, some balance to that. And as long as I am able to, and God gives me the ability and the wherewithal, I will continue doing that. So this evening, I want you to put on your seatbelts, because you're going to have to hold on as we venture together in this Valentine's Day Eve, Black History Month, and well, all the other themes that are relevant for this evening, and journey together down a pathway that I believe at the end we'll walk away better than we began. So now that I've put the carrot out, and you're, those who of you who do not know who our guest are going to be tonight are wondering, I'll just simply state, get on our mail list. Simply send me an email to Daryl, DARRYL_CLA18 at MSN.com, and I'll be sure to add you to the mail list. You'll be privy to who our upcoming guests are going to be, and what the topic of the evening is going to be. You'll also have an opportunity to send me suggestions in terms of the content of our programming, what you like or even dislike, and we'll certainly take those things into consideration. So the format for this evening is to bring you a special treat, and that special treat that I am referring to is going to be our, well, I would say, key speaker, our key guest, Dr. Akhil Kafani. Yes, Dr. Kafani is with us again tonight, for those of you who aren't on the mail list. And so I always get wonderful feedback when Dr. Kafani's here, and to no surprise. But as I said, I have a special treat this evening, because just to get Dr. Kafani warmed up a little, not that he needs that, we're going to have a little short spoken word in honor of Black History and Valentine's Day. And we're going to start, and we have a couple very talented spoken word artists. We're going to just start with someone near and dear to me, close and near the person is. We have Miss Norma Clark, last name by no coincidence, my own cuz, my cosmic beauty, one and only Norma Clark. And for those of you who have been part of our music series, you're familiar with Miss Clark. She's a jazz artist, a writer. She's performed with many of the great artists around the world. She's even had a stint with the great Ella. And so I'm just so thrilled whenever I can collaborate with, as I like to refer to her spiritually, as my cosmic beauty. So she's going to share just a little spoken word before we bring on Dr. Akhil Kafani. And later on, we're going to have another spoken word by another talented artist, Mr. Bruce Butts. But for right now, I want to see if she's in the virtual studio. If my engineer has linked her in.
Yes, I am,
Gosnick,
darling.
Gosnick, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Right.
Oh, you make me sound so wonderful. Thank you for your gift of just praise and honor. Oh, goodness. I would like to, these are kind of off the cuff of Valentine's Day written words for you. Okay, I hope that you like them. Here, the first one you're going to go.
Well, you know, it's not about like as you and I talk. It's just about keeping it real from your spirit, knowing what your core spirit is. It's all good. And I would mention that. I don't know if you were on the air or with us earlier, and I said it's really at this point, and I hope Dr. Kofani speaks to that, it's really about understanding ourselves. I believe that's our role on this planet. We're not here by coincidence. We need to understand who we are and not be apologetic for it. So bring it, my cousin. Bring it.
Well,
no chaser.
I am going to – it's very short. It's called Valentine's Day. Cupid wasn't stupid when he brought you into my life. His arrow wasn't narrow because you have all of my heart. Thanks to Cupid, we are together. But I'm not stupid. I love Cupid.
Wow. Simple and sweet, as you said.
Yeah. This other one here, if I can have a, oh, here we go. This is the other one. It's kind of off the cuff also, and it's a Valentine's Day. We wanted to be married so badly. Cody had mixed feelings. I would be his sixth wife. So we let it go. So long to be a family in the tradition. Jamie wasn't so sure to afford his kids plus mine, so we put the dream on hold. Tie the knot with me tomorrow. Tie the knot and let it hold. I want to wear that white and gold. We sent invitations to the wedding. Tommy said I wrecked the plan. He said Friday was the big day. He came Sunday, ring in hand. It was finally going to happen. Bobby came to the church on time. I got held up there in Florida, tried to call, but lost the dime. Happy Valentine's Day.
I know there's some special meaning to that. And why you selected those two, I won't dare question, because I've seen the breadth of the work you've done, the volumes of pages and books. So I receive those. Those are beautiful, and I'm sure they'll resonate even more as I think about those later on. Thank you so much. I know this was very impromptu. I just called you right before, cousin. I know you wouldn't have done that for anyone else, but thank you for sharing
this evening. I just wanted it to be comical this evening. Just put a comical
edge
on that
Valentine's
Day. Yeah.
Too much drama, right? I knew you had some depth of the rationale. We're going to have Mr. Bruce Butts come up a little bit later, but I want to get right into Dr. Kofani. Thank you, cousin. Any last words you want to talk about regarding Valentine's Day, or any words of wisdom you want to share with us? I know you'll be tuning in to Dr. Kofani as well.
Just enjoy yourself and enjoy your life. Enjoy your life. Enjoy your life.
All right. All right. Bye-bye. Thank you. Well, we've been listening to, as I said, my own cosmic beauty, my cousin. We grew up like sister and brother in Cleveland, so I love her dearly. And as I said, she has done a few stints on Progressive News over the years when we've done our music series and discussing the history of music. She's a music aficionado and a voice like gold. And so she'll be coming back in the months and weeks ahead to share some more nuggets of her love and talent. So with that said, again, don't go away, because boy, and I know those are tough to follow, but Mr. Butts is quite capable, and he'll be sharing some spoken word later. Dr. Kofani is with us. Dr. Kofani is the professor at Essex County College, above all professors, and I'm being biased, but I've just known this brother for many, many years and have come to respect him beyond what I originally respected him of, and I knew about his background then. So since then, I've just really come to see the work he's doing in the community. He's also the director of the Africana Institute at Essex County College. He's an actor and author. I can go on and on. He's a sociologist, He's been recognized around the world for his work, for his books. But without further ado, because he has a very tight schedule, let me stop myself and let Dr. Kalfani come to the airways to shed a little bit of light in history and meaning of African American Black History Month. So with that said, Dr. Kalfani, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly.
Thank you very much, brother. It's good to be here, and it's good to be on the network that's about being progressive.
Well, we try, and you help make it that. I know you're busy. You're traveling. You're in demand. In fact, I know you're going to be speaking right in our fair town. I know you have several engagements around the state and the country, especially for Black History. You're in demand. I just appreciate you taking this time out. For those of you who are in the New Jersey area, Plainfield area, he will be a keynote speaker at the Richmond Tower Senior Citizens Complex, where they'll be holding, I believe it's their 15th annual Black History Month event celebration. And Dr. Kalfani is the keynote speaker. Reach out to me later for more information or to Dr. Kalfani. I'm sure he's going to give his reach information before he leaves the airwaves. So with that said, Dr. Kalfani, share some nuggets with us.
All right, will do. Well, first of all, I also want to let you know that I'm going to be also at the keynote speaker at the Newark Public Library for the Francis E.W. Harper Literary Society on February 27th from 6 to 8. The topic I'm speaking on there is the living legacy of Carter G. Woodson. So that's going to be a fun one. And maybe I'll give a couple of tidbits on that topic here today, if that's all right.
No, you know, you're at home, so stop it.
So, you know, I think that when we think about this whole topic, I was at an event the other day, and they were talking about the history of the African American experience, and you know, one of the things they said that caught me a little off guard was the fact that we shouldn't worry too much about the past, and we should move forward. And that always kind of, I understand the present now, right, that we are living in the now, that we are here in the now, and that the now, really there's only but one time, and I understand that. But when we think about who we are and how we got to this place, that I think that when we don't think about our historical foundations, that there's a void. And so I want to suggest that as we're engaging in this month, that we don't do so devoid of that history, right? Looking back at the Sankofa. Sankofa is a Ghanaian or a Khan, or maybe it's a tree word. That basically it says that, you know, you have to, it's okay to go back and get that which you've forgotten. In other words, we've got to look where we've been to know where we're going. Right. And I think that we have to be careful sometimes when we don't look back, because what happens is that we end up repeating things that take us down a direction that we don't really want to go. And one of those things, the place I was at last night was in New York. It was a Polish Cultural and Historical Center. And one of the persons there who I learned about maybe a year or so ago, was someone named, I believe it's, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, is Kuszko. And Kuszko was a Polish, I guess he was in the military in the United States. Maybe he wasn't even in the United States at the time, but well, yeah, I guess it was. But he had worked for the government, and he, instead of collecting his salary over the time that he was here, he had let that money just acquire, and he had written a document to Thomas Jefferson. Have you heard this story?
No, this is new.
He had written a document to Thomas Jefferson saying that he wanted to have all of those funds donated. He wanted to donate those funds and to have them to purchase a group of people who were enslaved to purchase their freedom and to help provide for their education and training and skills and things of that nature. And then when he left the United States and went back to help the peasant folks in Poland who were either indentured servants or had other kinds of relationships there, that he was basically trying to change their situation there. And he was not as successful doing that as he wanted to be, and then they had arrested him. But in the long story is that in the end he died, right? And so after his death, well, what was written for Thomas Jefferson to do was to use the money that he had to free a bunch of Africans who were enslaved. Well, in the end, what happened is Thomas Jefferson reneged on that. So here he had the opportunity to and the funds to do so that weren't his own funds, and the agreement, right? So there's a written document. He had an agreement to do this, which he agreed to do, and he reneged on this. So that speaks volumes to the legacy of the words that he signed his name to that he didn't agree with wholeheartedly, because he was nothing for him to do to honor Kusko's last will and testament, if you will. And so we use this as a foundation once again of looking at American history and seeing and understanding what that history foretells or foretold and continues to foretell. And I think that when we look at these kinds of things, we begin to see that that a lot of times we are looking at things outside of their actual context, and that their actual context would tell a different story if we were fully engaged in what that information presents to us. And so there's in this museum they had information about that, and they told us about the story. So I thought it was really intriguing for some things that we have little to no knowledge about for most of us. And I think that we need to – that's an example of looking at the words and the history of something that we don't want to repeat, right? We don't want to go on these false promises that someone might set up or say, and then we see that there's a different reality that plays itself out. And if we really dig in and begin to see that, then we can see that if we really want to challenge the foundations of the historical foundations of where we are today, then we would have more tools to do that with. And so this information that I've just given is yet another tool, right? Something that we can look at and use and to begin to say, how did this American history play itself out? And the thing is that we can look at both Kusko and all the folks around him and see that the example that he set really as an abolitionist, right? That's how he acted as an abolitionist in his death, that he was someone who set the tone for George Washington, for Thomas Jefferson, and the like of all those folks at the turn of the transformation from a colonial to a U.S. reality, and they chose not to step up to the plate. They chose not to take his example. And I haven't verified this, but one of the people at the program last night said that he has one of the most some of the statues throughout the United States are representative of him, and there's more statues of him. There's only one or two other people across the U.S. who has more statues than him. So there's this remembrance to him, but we don't remember him, right? We don't teach him in school. We don't talk about the story. We don't talk about the failure of Thomas Jefferson to follow through on his words. So what other failures, what other stories are there that we fail to understand, to recognize, and to tell. And so we must focus on the Sankofa because there are so many stories to be told, right? How many rebellions did Africans lead to bring about transformation, right? How many of us know about the Stono Rebellion? How many of us know about the rebellions in the New Orleans, right? There was a whole thing about Orleans, how it was, there was a fight to gain independence in Orleans, and New Orleans came into being because the Africans lost in that particular battle, right? We know about Denmark Vesey. We know about the most popular slave rebellions, but there's hundreds of them once we begin to do our research. So then the earliest rebellions we can think of are the first time that Africans were pushed to be captured. So the rebellion started before they left the continent, right? We often focus on the rebellions here, but really let's put this in context once again. And without history, without Sankofa, we fail to provide and to understand the value and the nature of the context. And that context is something that I think that once we take a different stance, that we will see that we need to look and see and do differently with that. And so I think that those are beginning points, right, to realize that. And the other thing is I want to take a moment to talk a little bit about Sankofa. Can I do that for a minute?
Yes, please. Now, how is that spelled? Because I want our listeners to go and Google that and really absorb some beyond what you're going to share so they can really take this and embed it and share it, especially with their youth that they have influence
yes.
in. How is it spelled?
S-A-N-K-O-F-A, Sankofa.
And it talks about understanding one's history or specifically African history and what was forgotten.
Right. So that, you know, Africans, we have a lot of universals. So Sankofa, it speaks to African history, but really anybody could use Sankofa, right? Sankofa means to go back and fetch it, right? So that you can go back and fetch your history. Anybody could use that, but this is an Africanism that we use to talk about what we must do as people of African descent. And so that's the context within which I think it's important, at least for me, but I don't deny that other people could use the idea, the concept of Sankofa, because I think it has that level of universal context that could give us the way of thinking about it, right? When we talk about Sankofa, let me first describe it, right? So Sankofa is an image. I have one sitting right here in my desk in my office. Sankofa is a bird that looks backward while flying forward, right? The Sankofa, and many of them, not all of them, also have an egg on its back. So now the egg on its back is another level of context, right? So that the bird looking back while flying forward is saying we must always look behind us to not that we only look in that direction, but we look behind us and we look forward so that we understand all those things. We understand what the periphery and what's in front of us and what's behind us and what's in, on the sides of us, what's underneath us, what's above us. We want to understand all those things. But then this egg that rests on the back, see, I think a lot of people don't understand that, right? Because that egg, and I'm going to talk about this in the talk when I come out there to Plainfield, that is that egg sitting on the back, an egg is fragile. And that egg represents the foundations of our history and culture. And so that our history and culture has a level of fragility. And it's our responsibility as a people to protect that which is fragile. If the bird doesn't protect the egg, it will either be eaten or it will not hatch, right? It will not be nurtured. We have to nurture that for the next generation. We have to nurture our history, our stories for the next generation so that we can tell them and share them with those folk, with the young folks. And then that provides another level of understanding for those young folks who come up after us. The other part of that is that the egg, the bird doesn't hatch the egg. Once you've nurtured that egg and it's been provided with the conditions of birth, that the egg hatches itself. So that our, at some point, our youth must do that which is necessary to take them to the next level. They must become the birds. They must become the next generation that leads the rest of the birds at some point. So they become the future leaders. We're preparing the framework, the context for them to do so. And once we've done that in a thorough way, then they have the ability to move forward in their on the, in their own right, right? And that hatching is their coming into being. They're being prepared to take up the mantle. Now, another place where us who are a little older have failed, though, is that even in nurturing that egg, right, that history, that community, the youth, to get to the place of being ready to hatch, is that if you have not protected the surroundings of that upon its hatching, that predators will attack that hatchling, right? And so in our case, often, is that our youth have been devoured by those surrounding them. So in some cases, that's the police. They get devoured by it. In some cases, that becomes their own vices or lack of education, whether it's drugs or gang violence or other things, that those things have become, and the conditions that bring those things into being. So, I mean, I'm not suggesting that they exist in isolation. They exist because the social conditions create the environment for those things to not only exist but to manifest themselves and to fester amongst themselves and to continue to grow. And so we have to recognize that and then think about ways in which we can transform our community in such a way that those things no longer have the ability to affect our community and the youth therein. Now, protecting that environment is multifaceted. That means that we need to have the education, the cultural, the spiritual, the dietary, the business, the legal, the psychological, all of those elements must be present to protect the hatchling. And oftentimes we've fallen short. So we allow all these fast foods, and we own some of them, to proliferate in our community. We don't have we have food deserts in our community. We have poor educational institutions oftentimes in our communities. And so then we have to see where we're responsible for those types of things and recognize that in our responsibility, we have the ability to change that reality. But we have to take the initiative to do those things, and they don't happen by themselves. So that's the primary thing, is that what is our willingness to take the initiative to bring transformation to our communities? You see what I'm saying?
I understand exactly what you're saying. And if I can just intervene, if you can hold the thought, if I know you're in the midst of a thought process, but just to intervene for a moment, I believe, if I can get some feedback, I'm hearing you say that we must take responsibility that for that environment. We have to think about our future. And as the song says, our children are our future. It's never been more of a true, in my belief, of a spoken word. So if our children are our future, and you talked about some of the things, education, dietary, and legal, and social, and we must nurture the environment in which they're being brought up in, that doesn't preclude our own being hurdles, obstacles to the nurturing of that environment. When I say our own, those within the community, our own Black folks, if you will, to be very non-specific, tongue-in-cheek. So I just wanted to ask that if that is part and parcel of what you're referring to in terms, or are you speaking that those that are antagonists to our environment are, you're only referring to those that are outside of the environment or those who are non-African or African-American. Your feedback
right,
on
right.
that.
So I'm speaking to both of those things, right? That there are Africans who are part of it, but even when in the context where those folks are that we are part of our own kind of problem situation, what I'm suggesting is that we also have to be cognizant of the fact that there are oftentimes external forces, even when we're the ones who are involved, and though those mm-hmm. external forces have a negative impact on things or a sustaining impact, right, so that they sustain and perpetuate divisiveness in our community. The old idea of divide and conquer, how that's played itself out time and again, and we've mm-hmm. been susceptible to that. So we need to recognize that we've been susceptible to that and that we need to confront that susceptibility and think about how we can change that so that we become less susceptible to the impact, the imposition of white supremacy. I think that we have to recognize it for what it is, and some people take an issue when I say the word white supremacy because they say, well, they're not supreme or they're not supremacist. And what they're missing, I think, in that context, though, is that the endeavor to maintain a supreme relationship over individuals in your surroundings, so that not that we're giving them any supreme understanding, saying that someone is above us, but that their objectives in their divide and conquer and their other ruling kinds of ideas and things that we can think about in that context, that's how we have to look at what the endeavors and intentions are and focus on those things. And so then them as external forces, but as well as the impact that they have on internal forces. So that in the continent, they talk about the neo-colonial comprador or the neo-colonial rule, right? So that in the neo-colonial rule, the comprador is the one who is working on behalf of the colonial state. So the colonial state is not there anymore, but the colonial masters are still ruling, right? And so we have long had those traditions in the islands and on the continent. And that's not just where Africans are concerned. In other places where colonial relationships are present, we see the same thing kind of playing itself out. We can see that in South America and other places, as well as with regard to African people. And so we need to be cognizant of those instances where the neocolonial comprador is present and engaged and working to the demise of African well-being, African conditions and success. And sometimes they're masked very well as those who are in favor, right? So if you take Mobutu, for instance, right? Mobutu Sese Seko in the Congo, you know, he came and Zaire had a European name, and he changed it to Zaire and had people wearing African clothes and made that seem as though he was all for the people, but in the same time, he was pilfering all the wealth and working with people like George Bush when he was a member of the CIA and other folks like that. So then those things, and he was involved in the assassination of Lumumba. And so once we look at all those things, then we have to take a different, very different look as to what's going on. Whose interests are those folks working towards? And we've had them here in the African-American context. You've seen them in other places around the world, whether it's in the islands and South America. And so those are all the incidences that we have to take into consideration and come up with a strategy for their presence, right? I mean, I've been in organizations where they've presented themselves a sheep wearing wolf's clothing, and we have to look for those wolves who present themselves as sheep and recognize that they're working on behalf of someone or someone's who are working to undermine and to the demise of African success.
Well put. Yeah. So it's a twofold process. That's what I heard you say, that both. I said, was it one or the other? You said both. We have to look out from all angles from which our adversaries may approach. And that's not always an easy task, because that sheep's clothing can be so well worn that I think some individuals are so misled. And I'll give an example. Music industry, entertainers, athletes, these are role models. Contrary to whatever Barkley's first name is, back in the day when he played for the 76ers in the 80s, and he says, I'm not a role model, when he spit on the fan. And that's something for the old heads that understand, but some of the new heads on the line, you can look it up on Google, Barkley spitting on fan. In his anger, he was non-apologetic, claiming he was not a role model, and it was never a greater lie. And look where he's at now. But he's, of course, been pushed where he is now, from my analysis and perspective, which could be wrong, because I am human. But I don't think so. Even tying back to that, in terms of the whole, clandestine covert attempt to, as you say, destroy that environment by making it okay to soft shell us, if you will, to turn the heat up slowly until we turn around and we wonder, how did this get worse? So I appreciate that, my brother, that perspective, really being on the lookout. But how do we be on the lookout? Are there any keys to that you want to share with us?
Oh, yeah. Well, so I'll start off by, once again, going right back to the Sankofa. and that's where it starts, is that, one, we got to know our history. We got to know our past. And we have to know it deeply, right? We oftentimes know it on the surface. And I claim at this point that I only know a scratching of the surface. Whatever I know is just scratching the surface. And so if that's the case, I know a lot of folks, Dr. Carr from down at Howard University, and a whole bunch of people who are great scholars and great Pan-Africanists. And I think that when we look at it from that perspective, that we know that there's some folks out there who have some other things to look at that we need to think about in a greater way. And I think that when we are willing to see that what we know is limited and that there's so much more to be known, that's another beginning, right? So that the Sankofa, digging deep and remaining humble. As we remain humble, that provides a space for us to say that we don't know something. And some of us want to present ourselves as though we know so much that there's little left for us to know. And that I have a saying that says, the fool speaks loudly about that which he or she doesn't know, while the wise sits silently at the feet of the elders.
Mm.
That's where we want to be, right? Let's sit silently at the feet of the elders. Let us let our elders educate us. Let us be still and be silent long enough to have something sink in, to have something to come and resonate with us in a way that we haven't had it to resonate before. Once we've done that, then we've transformed the space in which we're in so that we are now, as much as we know, we become the student, right? And I want to suggest that we all have the possibility of becoming the student. If there's somebody who's older than us, who's been around long enough, that they have some knowledge, some insights into things that we haven't had insight to. Now, our objective is to become a person who is an elder. Now, this may rub a few feathers wrong, but I'm going to say it anyway. Some of us become olders as opposed to elders. And an older is someone who has increased in age but acts like a person who's much younger than him or her, right? So that you can have, as they say, sometimes you can have an old fool, right? And so that our strivings should become older and wiser. And so to become an elder means that you've sat at somebody's feet at some time and you now have a recognition that there's someone who knows something and that you have the ability to learn something as you get older. So Dr. Jeffries is someone who is elder, but he talks about his elders when he's speaking. And Dr. Jeffries is 82, right? And so at what point in time do we, if we're not at that age, do we recognize that we have room to grow and learn and to collect some knowledge about things that we don't know? Doesn't matter how extensive it is. So I think that's an important part. But beyond that I think we have to also go back to being innovative. And that's where we actually turn to the youth, because a lot of our innovative thinking comes from the youth. And we have to be willing to partner with the youth to get to new levels of thinking and doing. If we look back at the struggle in the 60s or in South Africa or other places, most of the people who were the at the forefront of the struggle were the youth. I mean, think about it. Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, they're both more than 20, almost 20 years by the time when they died, were about 20 years younger than I am now. So that means that they did a whole lot in the time that they were here. And so we have to think about those kind of things. What is it that they did that enabled them to get to that point, and did everybody see them as the people that they see them as today? And the reality is no. People despised King oftentimes when he was alive. Definitely despised Malcolm X when he was alive. And so if we think about those things, then we have to think about what we do now differently. I gave a speech last year, a keynote address talking about Martin Luther King, and the question was, everybody was focusing on, was this whole thing about 50 years later, right? That King 50 years later, 50 years later. But my point was that, well, let's stop for a minute. And if we want to over-focus on King or other things, that we can see that there's been lots of 50 years, right? What did the people 50 years before King, before Malcolm X, say about the people 50 years before them? And are we asking the same questions and telling the same stories for each of those? And if so, we have a problem. We have a recurring problem because we want to be at a different place. And I don't think that we're actually at the different place that we want to be. And the way I tried to contextualize that in the end was to say, what will people say in 50 years from today about you, about us, right? What are we doing that's going to have our names and our legacy spoken about, and what specifically are they going to speak about the legacy that we had over in 50 years from now, in 100 years from now? So not only should we think about King, not only should we think about those other folks, but we should think about our own legacy, not for the sake of having a legacy, but for the sake of us being engaged in the transformation of the world in which we live. That's how you leave a legacy. And your legacy, to a certain extent, is your children. They're your living legacy. And so what do your children do after you're gone? What have we instilled in them? And maybe not even our own biological children, but the children that we have in the community, right? Because Malcolm and Martin, they had lots of children in the community, if you will. Maybe not literal children, but I'm talking about figurative children, right? So oftentimes we critique leaders because they fail with their own children, or their own children didn't follow in their footsteps. And that's an important question about why that happens. I mean, it happens often. But how many children, how many living legacies do they actually have when we think about it from a different perspective, right? How many of us are the children of Malcolm X? How many of us are the children of John Henry Clark? How many of us are the children of Carter G. Woodson? How many of us are the children of Frances Cress Welsing? How many of us are the children of Harriet Tubman and Winnie Mandela? I think that's a different question. I think that pushes us to think about it differently. And so then, what is it that we're doing? And if we're not doing the things that we think will lead us in that direction, then it's time for a new plan. And that is one of the things I think we fear, right? We fear the unknown. We fear stepping out of our comfort zone and doing something different to try and impact the world in other ways. And I'll give you an example of what I do, for instance, sometimes. So I think about often how I'm impacting the world, and I think about how old I am, and I think about my children, and I think about my participation in the world as a professor, as an ambassador to the ONI in Nigeria, as a spiritualist, as a scholar. And I say, what other things do I might need to do? So what do? I broaden the horizon of what I do. So I'm a chaplain, right? I broaden the horizon of what I do. So I'm an actor. I broaden the horizon of what I do. So I'm a writer. I broaden the horizon of what I do. So I'm working on inventions. I broaden the horizon of what I do. And then that gives me more places of challenging myself to do and think differently, and then leading the way for other folks to know that they can do and think differently. We don't have to be any one thing. So my time as a professor, maybe my time as a professor at some point comes to an end. So I ran for office, right? Maybe I run for office again, right? Maybe my time as a political activist is coming to an end. Maybe I have something else that I have to do that I haven't figured out yet that's going to bring about a transformation in the world that we live. Maybe I'm going to write some more poetry. Maybe I'm going to do photography. Maybe I'm going to do some paintings. Maybe I'm going to do something else. Because if I find out that what I'm doing doesn't lead to changing the world, then that means that I have to find and embark upon a new path. And that's how I see it, is that we can't be stuck in a rut. And I think the youth prod us to be thinking about and doing differently. And sometimes we resist and we're reluctant to that because the way they decide to do it irks and irritates us. It rubs us the wrong way. You know, why are they wearing those clothes that way? Why are they got their hair looking like that? Oh, why do they listen to that music that's loud and like that? But the same questions keep being asked generation after generation after generation. We just have not looked at, as I said earlier, 50 years before the last 50 years, before the last 50 years, and see that those same kind of critiques and questions exist. And either we come up with a different story or we keep asking those same questions.
You know, when you were speaking, it resonated deep within my mind and then beyond into my spirit and then into my soul. And I'm not going to go there in terms of what that means, listeners, and I know Dr. Akil understands. But just let what I said resonate and an understanding will rise to itself. And in doing that, I thought of an analogy. Analogies work for me. And I thought of a relay. And if you look at a relay, and you don't have to be a track and field enthusiast, we all know because most of us had some engagement in school, and in school we understand what a relay is, whether it's a baton or you're passing the ball. And so you want to think about it from what I'm hearing, and I love the perspective that you brought in terms of what is it that I'm doing when I've got the ball. In that 50-year period, did the overall race slow down? Did it speed up on my leg, on my watch? Did I bring everything that I had? Did I leave anything back on the track when I was done? And that really brought something home. And I try to be conscious. And you still brought some more home to me. So I just want to thank you. And I'm not trying to patronize you. And I'm not trying to be big and bad like I don't have to patronize you. I'm just keeping it real. I appreciate that perspective that you brought, Dr. Kilfani. Because I do. I just first thing that hit me was a relay. And I'm saying, okay, I'm in it. I'm still in it. I got a baton. And we all do. And I'm thinking, wow, I need to broaden the horizon some. Oh, I'm doing some things. And some people say, Daryl, you're doing too many. But maybe I need to drop some things if they aren't working to make a difference. And you answered my question. How do we know? You'll know by the fruit that's bared from it. And I got that also. If you don't see any change, if you don't see any movement, if you don't see any improvement, then maybe you need to, like the bump and go car, back up and go another direction. Or maybe if it is working, but not as well, or you can have do something else that occurs and comes to your conscience because you put it out into the ethers that you want to make a difference, it'll come to you. You may not want to acknowledge it, but it'll be there. I'm going through that right now.
Yeah. No, I think that's important. You know, what you made me think of is I like the track analogy. I'm a track person, so I like that. I'm going to borrow that part.
my pleasure.
But the other part of that, though, is that it makes me think about the whole idea of being in a room with stale air, right? You may be able to breathe in it, but it's not optimum, right?
Mm.
So that you're in there and the air is stale and the level of oxygen gets thin, so you don't die, you don't pass out, but maybe you can't create, right? And so to get to a place where you have the ability to create, maybe you need to go somewhere we got some fresh air, right? And so some of us live in spaces and places where the air is stale. And we know it's stale, but we're afraid or unwilling for one reason or another to go out and get some fresh air.
Ooh.
Or maybe we forgot the value of what fresh air will do for us. And so we're so used to the stale air that we think the stale air is fresh. And so now we're living in this stale air environment and we can't grow because we don't know that we need fresh air to get to a place where growth is possible.
I'm going to borrow that one. Wow. Get out the stale air. No, get out. I mean, you know why? Because breathing is a part of life.
Right.
And everyone can relate to that. You don't have a choice but to relate to that. And if I, like the other listeners, were listening as they took a next breath, they thought about, was I taking a full breath or was I taking a shallow breath? Because we do a lot of shallow breathing. I mean, that's
yes.
a whole holistic and wellness concept that you and we talk about offline in terms of being well. And I think maybe we are shallow breathing. And that's another analogy to take off on the stale air piece. And if we are breathing deep, are we breathing stale air? And do we need to step out of that? We need something to shake our conscience. And I'm taking everything I can get. I don't want to leave a stone unturned because I know that I'm flying below my altitude capability. And if we all took that critical look, and it's not pretty, I'm not proud, but at the same time, I know it's a necessity for the survival because our children are our future. I have an innate desire and need to survive. And we all do. And sometimes we're such breathing stale air, we don't realize it. Our eyes are so clouded over, we don't realize that we're not even seeing a full picture. We're just, it's almost like having a glaucoma, and your vision is blocked, and you can only see so much, or cataracts, and you don't see. But then when someone breaks it down to you that, hey, there's something over to the right, and you, well, I don't see it. Well, wait a minute now. Maybe I need to step back and open my eyes some. And take that breath and take a vision of, wow, I'm in this, whether I want to be or not. I've got a baton. I'm loving it. I really am. The stale air. We need to get out and get some fresh air. And then once we get the fresh air, what are we going to do with it? And let's not forget, the children want to be influenced. When I was teaching 10, 12 years ago, and I did a stint in the school district for about 3 years. I took some time out. I was in my own business. I had freedom of time. And it was something that I had wanted to do to make a difference. So I was able to get involved in the school district within that which I'm in. And I started at the elementary level, and I guess they were just trialing me on these special projects because I came in working special projects, not just as a substitute. And I engaged in elementary level, and I did some unique things, and some feathers were ruffled, and I had to prove some of the value of having the children think outside that curriculum box, if you will, to think about who they are and how that fits in with math and science and arithmetic and reading and writing. And so then I took that to the next level at the middle school level, which is the renegade level. So you have to relate to the children in a whole different way. But then when I got to the high school level, that's where the rubber really met the road, and having that relationship that you're talking about, where we need to really engage these students as they're about to approach into the real world so that they can decipher and sift through the wolf from the sheep. And if they're not prepared at that level, they're going to be entering into that environment that you're talking about that is going to be devastating for them. And to not necessarily any fault of their own, even though they'll be young adults, they weren't prepared when they entered adulthood. And I appreciate what you're saying about we've got to engage our youth. This battle is not the same battle. It's a race, but it's not the same race. We can't approach this from my perspective as we did in the 60s and the 50s because the children were more prepared and their minds were more open. And so I believe that at this point we have to do some decompression on our children because they're the think tanks. And believe me, there are think tanks, folks. They're thinking the next 30, 40 years in terms of what the African-American experience will be. And what we're experiencing now is a product of a think tank 50 years ago. And I believe, Dr. Kofani, that's what you're talking about when you say, what was going on 50 years ago? Did you pick up on what was laid before you, and are you using that now? And that's the kind of thinking that those same think tanks engage in. And I always knew about them, but it was brought home for me by Mr. Dick Gregory, who lived in Washington, D.C., who left his family and stayed there, not because he liked to be amongst the politicians, because that's where a lot of the action takes place in terms of what's happening here in America and around the world. There are think tanks, conservative and somewhat, if you want to call it, liberal, but I still believe we have to be very careful with that. We have to be very, very discerning, because some people will live under labels, and that could be a sheep that you've got to be very careful of. I'll put this out. I know you talked about the politics. All Democrats aren't good for blacks, and all Republicans are not bad for blacks. Yeah, I said it. So we've got to be bold in that sense, folks. We've got, and this is just me speaking, we've got to be bold and we've got to be careful. This is a different environment that we're in, and we have to be very discreet, and we have to be very almost cunning. And that's why I appreciate Dr. Akhil Kofani when he comes on, because he lays it, and he lays it straight, and he lays it strong without a chaser. I love you for that, my brother. I truly do.
Yes, sir.
And you
yes,
came
sir.
Real with it.
In fact,
I can remember Dr. Kofani, and just bringing up, I brought up his spirit and energy. I might as well lay it. Dick Gregory gave you that ultimate compliment. And he said it, if you may remember, because you came on, I believe, before he did, opening up for Dick Gregory, if you will. And he says, a brother like that is what we need in this society. That's a compliment I'll never forget, after you laid on some nuggets of your wisdom to the listeners. And that was probably about 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, thank you.
Yeah, so you're quite welcome. So I want to just say a couple things if I got another couple minutes.
Go ahead.
This
is your show.
I want us to think about this transformation. I want us to involve science in what we do. I want us to think about this transformation and this completely opposite way of thinking in a way of seeing how we see and seeing the limitations of how we see and knowing that other things and people see differently. And let me break down what I mean by that. So
okay.
We have three cones in our eyes that enable us to see the rainbow and the world as we perceive it, correct? And then
three cones. Help me out with that. Three C-O-N-E-S?
We have cones and rods, which enable us to see color and images and all that stuff.
Oh,
so
okay.
The cones and rods are the things that enable us to see, and then our fiber optic nerve.
From a science
and
perspective.
All those things.
I got you.
I'm saying literally able to see. And what we see, is beautiful to the extent that what it is that we know, but that many people don't know that there's a group of women around the world, not many, that have four cones. And so they see what we see a little differently. They see more gradations in red and things of that nature, for instance. Right? So their view of the world is different than the average person's view of the world. But there's something called the mantis shrimp that has like 16 cones. And the mantis shrimp has the ability to see they see the rainbow that we see, but they see way beyond that. They have the ability to see ultraviolet and infrared light. So their perception of the world is nothing like we can imagine. But I bring this point up because I want us to think that there's things, the way we see them, that aren't always what we see, and we see them because of the abilities that we have, but there's a possibility that even what we see is different than what we think it is. And until we are willing to dig in and think about the world and what story presented out there for us to actually see that we have to take a step back and figure out what we bring to the table as Africans and find out what is our lens. What are the cones that we bring to the table that has not enabled us to detect the things that we need to be detecting? We only had the cones and the rods that we have been given by our tormentors over the years, right? A lot of people are reflecting on this 400 years later, right? So from 1619 to 1919. But really what that is, until we get the proper lens, and I'm going to help to give us a little bit of lens on this today, that the lens that I think that we need to have for that is to understand that that 400 years is 400 years of terror, right? And even before that, that the terror started even before then. So that to start with this and to reflect on this 400 years is kind of a misnomer, because there's so much that happened before then. Bartholomew Diaz came down came down the coast of Africa all the way to the tip of the Cape of Good Hope in the 1400s. So the onslaught of white supremacy started very early, right? And so then when we look about that and think about his circumnavigation of the continent and the circumnavigation as they got all the way to India, right, with other folks, he was a Portuguese person, but other folks after him, that and their encounters and their interactions with Africans and Indians and other indigenous folks around the world, that it was a story of conquest. It was a story of pillage. It was a story of destruction and genocide and annihilation and the destruction of culture and history and legacy and the envy and the spite of them to think that other folks couldn't be as good or as better than them. How could they possibly have symbols of greatness in their society when all that which is great comes from Europe? Well, we have to look in and dig deeper. The things that were great that came from Europe, if we all know that the foundations of humanity are African, then the things that Europe acquired that were great got their start where? In Africa. And so then the things that expanded around the world, that the knowledge systems that have grown around the world, whether it's in China or in Japan or India, Saudi Arabia, the Americas, Australia, New Zealand, the Indonesian archipelago, in the Soviet Union, or Russia, in all these places had their foundation in Africa. And so then that foundation provides us with another lens. And we have to use that lens as a way to begin to examine and understand the world. Use that lens to talk about the theories and the philosophies and the spiritualities of the world. Until we begin to approach it that way, we get stuck on somebody else's lens. And I would suggest that we need to be like the mantis shrimp and begin to use, it has a tail that is, so they also, I think, refer to it as the scorpion shrimp. They have a tail that if it hits a glass, if they ever put it in a, they don't even put them in glass aquariums, they put them in plastic because they can hit things so hard with their tail that they break the glass on an aquarium. So we need to break the glass on the misinformation that we've been exposed to. We need to break the grass and the shell on the stories we've been fed and get to and have a rebirth. That's where we are, is that we need to break the shell of the things that's been binding and holding us back or holding us in, and realize that we have to hatch the shell. We have to, the egg, that which is in the egg must hatch itself. The bird outside doesn't hatch the egg. So we have to break the shell and realize that there's a different story than the one we've been told.
Wow. Whew. What an education. That was just complete. Complete. Folks, we just had a lesson. I got six pages. That was a lesson. That was just not a keynote type of a informative piece. That was truly educational. And I'm got a speaking from an analogy perspective, I got a 4-course meal of information on that one. And it's something that I can truly walk away with. And anyone, I believe, listening to that, if they stepped back and just listen, and this is like a good movie. You can catch this on the archives, folks. blogtalkradio.com/Renford, and you just scroll down to Daryl Clark's Progressive News Weekly, and you'll see Dr. Akhil Kafani with Daryl Clark, PNW. And it's one of like a good or great movie. You watch it next time, and you just get a little bit more out of it, a little bit more out of it, a little bit more. That's what this has been like for me this evening. Dr. Kafani, I can't even, I couldn't in a 10,000 words thank you enough for what you have shared on this Black History Valentine's Eve. What a lovely, beautiful gift that you've brought to us. Thank you so much for your benevolence,
yes,
for your kind heart.
Glad to have had the opportunity to break bread with you, as it were.
Folks, you've been listening to Dr. Akhil Kafani. I'm going to just start out with humanitarian, sociologist, actor, the director of the Africana Institute of Essex County College, sociologist and professor, and I can go on and on. Dr. Kafani, how can someone reach you? That's just a glimmer of one of your keynote speeches, and I've heard many of them. How can they reach out to you if they want to engage with you or follow up with something with you?
Yeah.
Would you share that?
Yes. I want to share a couple of things real quick. My contact is Kafani, that's Khalfani, at Essex, that's ESSEX.edu. That's the best way to reach me. Number is 973-877-3219. And I want to invite everybody. We have a bunch of events coming up, so if I want to just share for African History Month, we have our 7th annual Garvey and Nkrumah Lecture Series going on here at Essex County College on the Thursday, the 21st of February. And we're going to have our keynote address. That particular one is going to be Dr. Kaba Hiawatha Kamini. And so I encourage you all to come out. He's going to have two different sessions. One is going to be at 11:30, and the next one is going to be at 1:10. So we have a little reception in between. So I encourage you all to come out. This is our Garvey and Nkrumah. We're reflecting on the Pan-Africanist nature of Garvey and Nkrumah. But he's going to have some other gems to share with you as well. So please join us and participate in that event. And then the event you spoke of that I'll be there with you all speaking, Daryl, if you can mention that in a second. And then I'll be at the Newark Public Library on the 27th. And then there's one other event. We have an event here at the college. It's called Surge, the Power of Women in Politics Today. That's going to be Monday night, February 25th, here in Smith Hall at Essex County College. So that's what we got going on. And then our African Spirituality Conference is going to be March the 23rd. Which is a Saturday. So we got a lot of stuff. We invite you all to come.
Where's
out.
That held at March 23rd?
That's going to be in Smith Hall also. And I haven't even started promoting it yet, but you'll be the first to hear this. We're going to have the play here, Zora Neale. We're going to be showing, we're going to have the play about Zora Neale Hurston's life. That's going to be in April. Haven't even gotten the flyers or anything done, so you're hearing it first here on your show, that's going to be April the, let me come to the date, give me one second. That's going to be April the 11th. We'll have two shows, one during the day and one during the evening. And that's going to be fabulous. It's the whole history of Zornell Hurston. So one woman play.
Well, I know if I have anything to have any influence on that, I'll be there, and I'll certainly do everything in my power to have you come back well before then to talk more about that and the event on the 23rd of March as well. So you have been listening to Dr. Akhil Kafani on Progressive News Weekly. There's numerous events going on, and you can get more information, as Dr. Kafani mentioned, at Kafani, that's Khalfani, at Essex, ESSEX.edu. And, of course, you can reach him at 973-877-3219. Let's share this wealth, and this is real wealth. You want to talk about power, real power. Power is the ability to influence one's well-being. It doesn't necessarily equate to money. It may just be education or influence over others. But whatever it is, if it ends up with you influencing your well-being, and money often plays a role in that, but certainly there have been so many cases we've seen in our history, i.e. the historic 60s movement, which wasn't just about money. It was about movement, and it was about change. That's power. And what Dr. Kafani is talking about is real power. So I thank you. Again, we're looking forward to having you back. We're looking forward to seeing you next week. And, of course, I'm going to be making my best attempt to catch you at one or more of these events. I see you're at Public Library as well on the 27th. So that's one I might be able to make. And also, I know I'm going to catch this Zornell Hurston piece. So looking forward to it, Dr. Kafani. Thank you so much. Peace and love to you and the family. Send all the best. And we'll be talking soon. I have one piece that I'd be remiss if I didn't end up with, and that is, I mentioned we have Mr. Bruce Butts. He's a spoken word artist, and I'd like to have him close out with us if he's still on the line. I know he's a big fan of Dr. Kafani's, and maybe Dr. Kafani. I know, Bruce, you said it was very short, so maybe Dr. Kafani will take this 1 minute or so you said you have for us with this one piece. Are you there, Mr. Butts? No, if we've lost the line, we may have lost the line. If not, we'll bring it next week, that's for sure. But see if we can and make a connection with that line. And if not, we'll go once and go twice and see if we can bring Mr. Butts on the line with us one way or another. And see what's going on with him. Okay, Mr. Butts, I don't see your line here. Yeah, looks like it's, let me see, we can reach him, see if we can get him back with us. Let's see if we can dial him up. We're going to have to bring him here. Mr. Butts.
Daryl.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we have you back on air. Can you bring what you have with us? I know you're a fan of Dr. Kafani. Can you bring that spoken word that you had talked about to us?
I can indeed. I know that was a little torn between two pieces, and one was the romantic piece that we had talked about earlier in reference to Valentine's Day, but the other was a little bit more Afrocentric, entitled Sankofa. So I was wondering which would you prefer?
Well, you know, we talked a bit about Sankofa. That's so interesting. You see how the energy works? One of my mentors, Dr. Mendoza, taught me that everything is energy, and energy is everything. And if we watch it closely, we'll see how it pervades everything. And here you have been thinking about that, and that was drawn to you, and Dr. Kafani was talking about it. So I'm going to tell you right now, let's go with the latter. My cuz, she spoke a little lightheartedly with regard to the Valentine's piece. Let's go with the Sankofa. Bring it.
All right, brother. All right, this is entitled Sankofa. Okay. Look into the sky. Beyond the clouds and the winds up high, look at the bird over each continent, meticulously spiraling in a calculated descent. Sankofa is the bird with a very unusual mission: to return the dead to the land of their fathers and return all doubt and division. Sankofa is not a vulture, but reverenced and respected throughout the African culture. The coming of Sankofa means the consumption of dead ideas. This bird consumes the vile and the waste and frees us of all our fears. On wings of glory and thorns closed tight, another mother's daughter is returned during the night. Sankofa reveals your mental condition, then heals your mind with only your permission. Look at Sankofa working in the sky, unshackling the dead and ingesting the despised. Another soul was lifted up and another mind released. Sankofa brings the living word, then returns that inner peace. The Negro's evolving, and Sankofa is why, separating the truth from the trick and the lie. Return to the source. Experience the origins of your peace and your force. Your vessel is defiled, so your burden has been increased. Because you don't question the Lord you serve, instead you act like a beast. You can be restored, but returned to the source of your God and your Lord. When Sankofa descends on you from above, do not resist, for he comes in love. With precision, Sankofa will extract from your mind the moral decay that gets in your way when God and man combine. Look to the heavens if you think you know, and behold a bird floating to and fro. Say that you're ready and prepared to go as your feet are raised from the pavement below. Free your mind, and the rest will follow. Without any magic or false bravado, you will radiate and pulsate, shine and glow. For Sankofa lives inside every Negro. Thank you.
Wow. That's all I'm going to say. Wow. Yeah, you brought it, Brother Bruce. So looking forward to you coming back, and we're going to do that that whole spoken word series, and looking forward to you being a major part of that. I just want to say thank you. Thank Ms. Norma Clark, Cosmic Beauty. Thanks again to Dr. Kafani. I'm not sure if he was able to hear that or not, but if so, I'm sure he will have appreciated that as well. So with that said, peace and blessings to all. Thank you, Brother Bruce. And say hello to family and wishing all is well with you and yours. And to everyone out there, happy Black History Month. Happy Valentine's Day. Be at peace. Tell someone, especially that those special ones, that you love them. Don't just show it. Say it. And until next week, when we have a very special program lined up, I just want to say peace and blessings. And tell someone about Progressive News Weekly. We're going to close out right now with a little something-something, because there's just nothing better than love.
I fell asleep late last night, and I dreamed that the night is almost half the day away. I just got up. Yeah. You don't have